At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Good evening, Razorback fans. I want to welcome you to the one, the only Hog Talk podcast, part of the Believe and Buzz Radio networks, where you can hear us on all podcast platforms, as well as Buzz to 106.7 in Central Arkansas. So please like, rate, and review our podcast, and all live shows are presented by Arkansas Brewing Company in Ozark, Arkansas. My name is Porter Hayes. Alongside me is Jacob Davis, and we are brought to you by BetOnline, which remains your number one source for all sports betting this season. Everything from NFL, bowl season to esports. You'll find us the latest odds, team matchups, info, player news, and games trends at BetOnline. The fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite leagues and events. So head on over to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BLEAV to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. And from the Amigo Provision Studios, we'll go to Aaron Nolan, longtime Razorback fan, communications director at Downtown Bentonville. Welcome to the show and making some time for us to talk a little dancing.
Yeah, man, I'm thrilled to be here. Hog fan through and through my entire life. Spent almost 20 years covering sports and was actually at the Final Four. Saw Mike Krzyzewski's last game last year. So I'm excited to get back to the big dance and talk about it.
Yeah. And, you know, they're playing Illinois, Arkansas, of course, you know, picks up what I think, honestly, was gracious 8 seed. You know, when the way things fell, you know, the way they finished in conference down the stretch, for them to still get an 8 seed, do you think that, you know, the previous Elite Eight runs had something to play with still getting that 7 seed opposed to a 10 or even having to play in, you know, to get in the tournament?
You know, I think seeding is an important thing. Arkansas traditionally has not done well in the 8-9 matchup. You know, UNC is that early memory that we all fall to when Arkansas probably should have. Bad officiating led to the Tar Heels winning that game. You know, this is going to be a tough bracket. I know that the guys on CBS, when it was released, we're all about Arkansas's athleticism and length being a trouble for Kansas. Obviously, we've got to get past Illinois first. The Fighting Illini are very athletic. They're strong. They've underachieved, just like Arkansas. So do we have another deep run? I don't know. I mean, I tweeted out, guys, and I would love to open this bag of worms. What is success now for this team? I argue, and this is going to be unpopular, and I say all this wearing my Razorback hat. I told my boss last year that if Arkansas was in the Final Four, it'd be really hard for me to cover it objectively. So I'm a diehard. I think one win is a successful year after what we've seen. I really do. I think they beat Illinois. And then after that, it's free basketball for me.
Yeah.
It's almost a crapshoot.
Right.
Basically, yeah. You really don't know. I think that Arkansas, the speed of the game in the SEC with the athletes that the SEC boasts, I mean, I think is going to overwhelm most of the Big Ten teams that are going to be in the tournament. I just think like Missouri is going to cause problems. I think Arkansas's length and their athleticism is going to cause plenty of problems, especially against Illinois. Now,
but haven't we said that all year? That's kind of my beef on this. And I hate to compare Arkansas to the Kentucky, you know, baby freshman teams that didn't, you know, achieve like what we thought Arkansas was going to this year. But to your point, Jacob, I think we've said that all year. And so I don't know what to get. That's why I'm saying one win is good enough for me. Well, and I hate to say that.
Yeah, and it goes to the fact is, just like on the women's side, you can't expect them to go up against South Carolina, win that game, and then get into the tournament. You know, I base everything, you know, SEC tournament, it's almost like you hold a little bit of weight, but anybody can get hot in the SEC tournament. Just like this, you can't expect them to, if they lose against a number one seed, to really now, let's call this season a failure. You can't base it on that. Now, if you want to go off regular season or how the expectations and how they fell flat, we can do that. But if they beat Illinois and then they go up against Kansas, and this is whether it's in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, or in the second round, you can't expect them to, say, lose that game and then, well, the season was a failure based on that loss alone.
Well, I hate to put the cart before the horse, but let's say they get to the second round, the round of 32, and you're taking on Kansas, a team that has beaten more quad one opponents than pretty much anybody else in the country. You know, you mentioned the Big Ten and how Arkansas's athleticism probably going to outweigh that league. That ain't happening in the Big 12, though.
No.
Big 12 is a really, really good basketball school or conference.
Well, and Kansas is that blue blood. You know, you look at Michigan State, yeah. Duke, Kansas, Kentucky. They're playing these high-profile games early in the year. Yes, it's for television and entertainment purposes, but it still boosts their resume. Look, their first, second game, they're playing Michigan State and then Kentucky back-to-back, per se. You know, but that's the type. That's what happens when you get to that status of Kansas, Michigan State, Kentucky, and so forth.
Let me go back. I want to talk about one other thing. As me now, I can be 100% a fan, which is really cool. I'm retired, if you will, from journalism, and so I can just be a fan now. And the lack of passion at the end of games has been really tough to watch. And so, you know, the Texas A&M game, that was rough, man. It was everything possible, what we thought Arkansas was going to be in the first half, and then it just fell apart. Same thing happened against Auburn in the second half. Where's that killer instinct? And Ricky Council was talking about it on the SEC Network, saying coaches after us have the killer instinct. That's what concerns me going into the second weekend. Again, I don't want to say Illinois is going to be a slam dunk, but I mean, that's the concerning thing. Where is that killer mentality? I mean, what are the two big things that you have to have in the NCAA tournament to have success? You got to have one heck of a guard. We've got that in Nick. And you got to have a great coach. Muss is a top 10 coach right now. You cannot argue that. But where's the killer instinct? That kills me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's been the issue here. I mean, it didn't rear its ugly head until maybe the Baylor game when we really started realizing – this team doesn't have it. Like, they don't know where to, you know, really finish. Like, you thought maybe Nick Smith showed flashes in an Auburn game. Arkansas, even though they blew a 12-point lead in the second half, they were able to kind of, you know, take care of business there. And then against A&M, they just blew another lead. It's crazy. It's like it's Mr. Jekyll and Hyde, you know.
No doubt.
You get one team on one day and one team on the next. It's hard to watch.
And that's
sometimes
what you get when you have 11 new players and so many are freshmen.
Yeah.
I mean, you
but they're not, but they're not by this time of the season, it doesn't matter if you're a freshman or not. You play 32 games.
That's where I disagree, because you look at Nick Smith Jr. playing half your season. Your go-to guy was out half the season. And then he comes in at the end. Look, you still got to have that mentality. You got to have that maturity.
Yeah.
And I understand freshman to sophomore, but you've got to be the guy as a freshman if you want to be the guy as a sophomore. And they just didn't have that leadership. And when you lose Brazil and Nick Smith Jr., let's just look at the football team. When you lost Catalan, you lose that leader. You lose that top of your food chain in your team, and you're like, where do we go? How do we do this? And look, You know, Muss has really done good in the transfer portal, and this is the first time he's really had to lean on freshmen to carry his team. And some did really good. Some didn't pan out, you know. Mm-hmm. So, look, it's tournament time. They're not good at free throws, and you don't have a true three-point threat. That is
talked about. By the way, that free throw thing, that's tough to watch.
Well, and me and Jacob talked about, you know, we're talking about this 8, 9, 7 through 10 seed. I'd almost want a 10 seed playing a 7 seed.
Oh, 100%. I'd rather be a 10 seed. Exactly. I said that a month ago. I said we need to play for a 10. I think I don't know. I'm not in the selection committee. I think that Arkansas needed that win against Auburn. But at the same time, if they lost against Auburn, being a 10 seed in my mind would have been better. I would have much rather match up against one of these twos than the one in the second round. Have you guys looked at the schedule? I'm looking at the schedule for Illinois right now. They beat some really quality teams. Mm-hmm. They beat Texas when Texas was two. They gave Purdue everything they had. The only thing that I can see on this one, they've lost three of their last four. Other than that, this is a pretty solid team.
You know, the Big Ten in basketball is just like Big Ten in football. Scrappy.
Slug fest.
You know, they're not flashy. They're not going to get, you know, you have a few couple ranked teams, but look at Purdue every year, just one of them scrappy teams. And that's going to be the biggest thing. They only average 7.7 or 7.1 three-pointers made per game. But we've seen how Arkansas played against Baylor. Are they ready for this battle they're about to get into with the Big Ten team?
I think two games that really stand out to me for Arkansas this year, one early on, Creighton. I thought that was just a fantastic basketball game. Top to bottom was a lot of fun to watch. And I really enjoyed the Baylor game. I think that their freshman was a lot better than anybody on our team that night. Forgot his name, but he's really, really good. And Scott Drew is one heck of a basketball coach. But those were two games that kind of stuck out to me, both lost. Everything else to me was, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda. Those two games were probably the best two games I watched them play in my mind. And they lost them.
Yeah. And I don't know if you mentioned it, Aaron. I think they beat UCLA too. I don't know if you said that, but man,
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
You're right. They beat them by nine.
Eight UCLA at the time. Yeah. Beat them by nine. Obviously, I mean, just blowing out a Syracuse team. They lost by five to Maryland, who's an eight seed. I mean, they
beat Michigan State.
Texas, yeah.
I mean, Michigan State's a tournament team.
Yeah. They played a legit schedule. And, I mean, it's weird because, you know, you don't really see the Big Ten as a – I really don't know how to explain it, like a power conference. Like, they're really good when they are – I mean – In conference play, but once tournament time comes, it's like they all drop like flies, and like there's one or two left standing. And right now, I just don't know if Illinois. I mean, the way their season ended up, the way ours ended up, it's gonna be an interesting battle on Thursday. Anybody got the time yet for that game?
3:30-ish on TBS
on Thursday.
Okay. Yes.
So, you know, it's a hot team that you want in the tournament, and neither one of these teams are hot right now. Illinois is lost three of their last five. Arkansas lost four of their last five. Two teams combined three wins in the last 10 games. I mean, these are teams limping into this thing, and everybody is going to – you know, I haven't seen the numbers, the odds yet, but I would bet that – I mean, Arkansas favored right now, according to ESPN, by about 58%. The bettors are going to put it on Arkansas based on athleticism and length. And as fans, it's hard to say, guys, that athleticism and length has paid off for us this year. And I don't question Muss. He had to do this. This was an amazing recruiting class. I told my wife in this house right now, I said, I'm not going to say it, but we may have to make a trip to Houston. I bought in. I thought this was going to be it. Injuries really suck, but, you know, outside of that, there's just some other glaring issues. Why was Texas A&M able to go so big when we were supposed to have all this length and size in the second half? That concerns me.
I just think that's where that youth comes in, that you're not used to banging.
But I would argue that's the Mitchell twins. That's Kamani. Those are not youngsters.
No. Your fouling, too. The fouling issues is what – I mean, Arkansas is known as a team this year. Yeah, they're big. Yeah, they're physical. And, yeah, they have length at the rim. But, man, we give up some of the stupidest fouls. And then you give up some of the stupidest turnovers that – I mean, that lead to, like, the Texas A&M game the other night. One bad pass leads to, you know, 6 points for A&M. Just, I mean, I think it was the Auburn game where Arkansas could have – had an 8-point swing potentially, and then they miss a free throw on the one end, and Auburn drills a three with Wendell Green on the other end, and it's a whole different ball game. Yeah. Like, there's just so many issues, like the free throw issues, the turnover issues. There's so many issues right now. But this Arkansas team is as talented as any of them in the country right now. That's what's crazy.
We can say everything that you just said, man, all of it, all day long. But at the end of the day, if these 7-8 players put it together for 40 minutes, heck yeah, they could beat Kansas. Heck yeah, they could be back to the Elite Eight. I mean, that's what's wild. When they and are we going to see this random experiment pay off?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Because if Nick Smith Jr. gets his mid-range going, you're not stopping him. I mean, once he gets hot from that mid-range, he is. But I wanted to point something out real quick. Illinois is averaging 74.7 points a game. Arkansas is averaging 74.4 points a game. It gets better. Arkansas is allowing 67.4 points a game. Illinois is allowing 67 points per game. So you want to look at statistics and just split this. They're shooting 30% from the three-point line. Arkansas is 31. So, we're looking at this. Their free throw percentage is a 68%. So if this couldn't be, you talk about 8-9, and how this has got to be one of the closest margins if you look at this team, because Arkansas's free throw percentage is 69%. So this is almost a dead even. I don't even know how you look at this and be like, all right, Arkansas is favored by 5 or Illinois. This would be a pick 'em in my opinion.
It may end up being. I mean, I think you're right. You look at that. I mean, this matchup predictor, I will say the matchup predictor for ESPN has been pretty spot on as of late. I've looked at a lot of those. And so right now they're picking Arkansas by 14%, so 58-42%. Look, to sum this all up, I have no idea what to expect Thursday. If they come out and play the first halves of Auburn and Texas A&M, put it together, they're going to steamroll. If they don't, I don't know. I mean, they've got this Shannon Jr. kid for Illinois, 17 points, 44% field goal percentage. He's shooting 80% from the free throw line. I mean, that kid could, if he throws up 17 a game, that could give us trouble. I mean, put him on Devo, hopefully, and lock him down. I got no clue. Well, I got hope. I got a lot of hope.
What happened with this team when Nick Smith Jr. had a bad shooting night? I mean, that's what happened the other night. He just had off shooting night. And you know what? That's the first time since he's come back where he's really come up. Now he's kind of fell off and had a bad shooting, which you're going to have. So you really got to focus on who's going to step up if he does. Or say Anthony Black has a poor shooting night. Who is going to step up? Because if you got Shannon and Mayer, they're averaging 17 and 12 points per game. You're going to have two guys that match that. Because if you just rely on one guy – And the ability that they've had defensively to where guys just start going off, especially in that second half. And we know how much importance the second half is come tournament time. It seems like somebody goes on a run. So if there is ever a game where you need to hold your lead and make your free throws, now's the time or you're going home.
Yeah. And that's what I go back to, what I asked you to begin with. What is success in this tournament for Arkansas? I say it as a, I'm 43 years old this year. For 43 years, I followed the Razorbacks. It's one win to me. And that's tough for me to say after the beginning of the year, top 10 in the country. But that's what the success is for me. It's one win.
And, you know, we were talking about Terrence Sheeran and Mayer, or Meyer, whatever his name is. You know, those two guys are transfers this year for Illinois. Terrence Shannon was a guard for Texas Tech the year that Arkansas made it out of the Sweet 16. into their first Elite Eight run. And then Mayer was the guy that was hitting shot at a shot, the guy that with the mullet, the beautiful mullet for Baylor the very next game that knocked us out. We beat Texas Tech to go to the Sweet 16, beat Oral Roberts the next game, and then played Baylor in the Elite Eight. Yeah, that's how it went. But yeah, both of those guys Arkansas is very familiar with. So I'm sure Musselman, if you saw what I tweeted earlier, Pigtron Nation put out a video of Musselman and the team's the way they were excited, and you look around and all the players are pumped, they're happy to be in the tournament, and Musselman's there, evil genius, already thinking, all right, which guy am I putting Devo on? you can already see it, like, all right. I'm game planning. You know, Ruta's over there already game planning too. You know, he's probably already got 400 pages worth of notes of Illinois of every single thing that they do. And if you've ever been to a Razorback basketball practice and look at the sideline of just poster boards, like five or six of them down the sideline of everything that a player of the opponent does. I mean, it's crazy what he does.
You bring up a good point. You give Mus 4 days now to game plan for one team. I like those odds, and I think, and this may be presumptuous because I have no idea what's going to happen on Thursday, I think a lifetime contract should be coming pretty soon for Mus. I really do. And I say that because he can take 4 days and really game plan. He can recruit. He can bring the transfer portal. So you give that man 4 days, I mean, to your point, he already knows him. I think it could look real good on Thursday, maybe.
Absolutely.
Possibly. I don't know. Fingers crossed. I don't know.
But it and this is the thing that's the toughest part of when it comes to, is it the team or is it the coaching? Because we can always, always point fingers at either side. But it's almost like, and it's tough to see because when you're going down these second half stretches, I mean, is it execution? Is it conditioning? I mean, it's hard to depict what is going on in these second half games, that it's happening so much, that is it not just one extra timeout that needs to be taken to really kind of game plan? You know, you never know. And again, like, it's almost like picking hairs between Arkansas and Illinois, between what's happening in the second half of these games. So, I mean, if you could pinpoint or you could give an analysis, what would you think would be one of the leading causes to these second half failures?
Man, that's a great question. And I'm the guy right now that I want to put some on Mus. I don't know if it is. I just think it's a team. Great. I love all these guys. These guys are great. For some reason, they haven't really meshed. And I look at the offense, to me, the offense just runs the 3-point line, basically that old three man weave. They're just running it back and forth, trying to find a cut lane, trying to find that pass down low. I mean, where is the high-low action? I mean, where is, you know, bringing out both Mitchell twins, running one of them to the free throw line extended, running one of them on the block to get out of that, just constantly going back and forth and swapping between Ricky and Jordan and Nick and Anthony up top? I mean, that's what it looks like to me. So, man, to answer your question, maybe it is a little bit of scheme. Maybe it is. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it looks like three-man weave up top to me on offense.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, I think, is just you have depth, but they're not playing depth. And I think when you're running that, like you said, that three-man weave.
Mus doesn't. Yeah.
And you're running up and down. And it also has to do with today's games. You don't see that many half-court sets. It's run and gun. Let's shoot with 10 to 12 seconds left on the shot clock. Let's hurry up and get back, and then just transition offense, transition defense. And I don't care if you're the top-notch Division I athlete. You do that 8-9 trips down the court, you're going to be winded. And then everybody talks about these free throw percentages. I would just question anybody, regular Joe, and I'm just saying two times up and down the court and then shoot two free throws. You don't have to do it four or five times. Sprint up and down the court two times, sit, and then try to see how many free throws you can do on a regular basis.
I will say, I mean, wrapping up that question you just asked, for me, what Arkansas missed is who Joe Pinion is supposed to be. Yeah. I mean, you can run high lows. You can run that three-man weave. If you've got somebody deadly, spot up, and they hit it in their clutch over and over again, I would have loved – I mean, Megan just said it. I'm reading your screen. I mean, Pinion may be that answer, and – And to be honest, I have no idea what these four or five guys are going to do after this tournament. Are they staying? Are they going? Next year could be pretty salty.
Yeah.
I mean, Pena didn't play as much as I like. Darian Ford running the point. I mean, there's some good things that could happen. But to me, that's what was missing is that sharpshooter. If you're not going to run the personnel with the personnel that you have on the floor in a high level.
And we've already seen it this year with Jalen Graham too. Like if you can be the best offensive player on the court, but if you don't play defense, you're not going to play from us. Yeah. And that's the thing is Joe can, I mean, there's been many a times where we've seen like where they were experimenting with the roster and in the lineup, like you would see Pinion get hooked up off a screen and then lose his man and trail. Like, sometimes you got to cut off the screen, like go skinny. You know, you got to do certain things. And as a freshman,
but the only way he's going to learn, the only way he's going to do that is get in the game. Yep.
Exactly.
It was one of those color guys on the broadcast one game, and he said, "How do you get better as a college player?" I thought that was one of the stupidest comments that I've ever heard an analyst say. How do you get better by playing the game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's true.
And for me, we haven't seen Joe in there, and he's got to learn in game. You can run against your team all day long.
Well, in a practice setting, you know that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I mean,
huge difference between practice. And again, Allen Iverson, and we're talking about practice. But there's a huge difference between practice and gameplay, game speed.
Look. Guys, I got my handicap on the golf course to the lowest it's ever been last year, and it ain't because I was practicing. It was because I was playing a lot. That's the only example I can give you.
The biggest thing I would like to know is, too, is, you know, in this era of college basketball where so many freshmen, whether they transfer or come into a spot, and they expect to just, let's just throw this thing together and throw it in the oven, it's going to come out a success. Do you think having a year like this really sets them up in the future for success? Because sometimes you kind of need to eat a little humble pie and be like, well, we're not this flashy, just all these all-stars, all-Americans, and we're going to come and set the world on fire our freshman year. But yet for the fans, too, they expected all this stuff. You take 25, 28 points per game out of your lineup and expect – any team, Duke, Kentucky, to win. But we're in this now, this microwave society where we want it now, and it's almost like, look at the years where it's taken kids 2 to 3 to 4 years to develop. They get in their senior year, and then they go off for 25, 26 points per game.
Well, you bring up a good point. I think we're kind of spoiled over the last couple of years. I mean, Musk hits lightning in a bottle. I mean, two Elite Eights in a row, that doesn't happen. I was in Bud Walton on Friday night for the gymnastics meet. And I looked up at the banners and I was counting the Elite Eights. And it has been a long time since Arkansas basketball was where, I mean, it was 95, wasn't it? The last time that Arkansas was in an Elite Eight. And that's when they went to the championship game and lost. You know, they could have repeated. So I think to your point, we're kind of spoiled. We expect big things. We made the tournament. And again, I go back to that initial question. I think, what is success now? You know, I mean, this is the season. This is why you play the game to get to this point. Let's get all the talent together and let's run it and see what happens. But for me, success is is beating Illinois.
Well, one more thing, Jake, and I'll let you finish up. But just another thing we're not even talking about is this 4-day rest, not only for us to prepare, but you're giving these guys a 4-day reset. You know, these guys have been playing 35, 40 minutes. They get 4 days to get healthy, get rested, get on a plane, do some walkthroughs. And Jacob, to your point of talking about at this point in time, they're freshmen, they're sophomores. Mentally, yes, because now they should know what to do. But now it's big boy time. It's time to step up to the big table. You're at the big dance. Are you going to be Cinderella, or are you going to be the pumpkin the carriage that turns into the pumpkin at midnight?
Well, I was at the Final Four. I was at the first four last year too. So I went to Dayton and then I went to New Orleans last year. And it is, you mentioned shoot around. It's completely controlled and much different than anything I think a lot of fans have ever seen. For all of those days, they get like 30 minutes on the court. That's it. It is timed. You walk out at 30 minutes, you walk off. That's it. And so going back to those 4 days of prep, that's where Mus the Magician really needs to come to play. And those guys need to understand, let's get some legs underneath us. Let's get some shots up. Let's make something and feel good about ourselves. And these 4 days at home are vital to what happens over the next week.
I agree.
Yeah. Who's going to be the Jalen Tates? Who's going to be the Justin Smiths in this tournament? Who's going to be the Moses Moody? Like, that's the crazy thing. It's going to be the fun and interesting thing over the next 4 days. I think it could be a whole different season. It is a whole different season right now.
Give me the fourth. Give me the fourth.
I love it. I love it.
Well, hey, we'll get you out there in this. You put out there, you got your new gig going on. So yeah, if you want to elaborate on that, tell us where we can find you in the future and what you got going on.
Yeah, I just joined up with Downtown Bentonville Inc. We put on First Fridays and Farmers Markets in Bentonville. Really cool thing, even sports related, my man. One of Dwayne Johnson's company signed on to be our presenting sponsor. Yeah. And so The Rock is now associated with Bentonville. Some really weird things I've been able to do. And a lot of the emails, they call him DJ. I don't know if I could say that. Nobody's here, so I don't know why I'm looking around. But they call him DJ. And one of my closest friends is DJ Williams. So I can't confuse those two right now. My wife, I was talking to her. I was like, yeah, DJ said this. Why are you talking about DJ Williams? I'm not. I'm talking about Dwayne Johnson. But anyway, it's going to be a really cool year in downtown Bentonville. We've got all of those different experiences, and we're really looking to enhance the community vibe and the feeling. You know, we can rock as many as 10,000 people on the square for a First Friday. And so we're running and gunning, and I'm still doing some storytelling. We've got a media element called Downtown Now that airs on TV, and it's a CBS Sunday morning style show. We just tell stories. So appreciate you asking about that, but we're excited about it. DowntownBentonville.org is where we're at. And anytime you're around town, come on down and I'll treat you to a good time in Bentonville.
Definitely. And if there's anything we can do to help promote you, you know, tag us, let us know any way we can help out.
If I get The Rock cooking me something, I'll let you know.
Hey, yes, that's one I'll definitely be at. I'll come with my Austin 316 shirt, and we'll see how that plays out.
All right, guys, thanks, man.
Yes, sir, you have a good one.
All right, see you, Aaron.
All right, man.
That's good. That was fun.
Well, we'll up against a break. After the break, we'll recap our conversation with Aaron Nolan, and then, of course, we'll talk some dancing, look at the bracket, see how things shape out, and then we'll take your thoughts and questions after the break, and we'll be right back.
At Fordham Lee Distillery, our bourbons look as amazing as they taste. A delicious high rye bourbon aged over 6 years. Fordham Lee is a company founded on the principles of great folks and spirits worth remembering. Look for Fordham Lee brands at Walk-On's, Liquor World, Buster's, and soon everywhere in Northwest Arkansas that serves fine spirits. Fordham Lee Bourbon says please drink responsibly. 21 means 21. Fordham Lee Distillery, blended and bottled in Middletown, Maryland.
Shelby Taylor Trucking serves all your timberland needs in South Central Arkansas. With over 50 years in the industry, Shelby Taylor Trucking has established themselves as trustworthy leaders in the industry. From planting to harvesting to hauling your timber, Shelby Taylor Trucking is ready to serve you. Follow them on all social media platforms at Shelby Taylor Trucking. Learn more by visiting their website at staylortrucking.com. That's staylortrucking.com.
McCoy Tiger Drug Store of Sheridan, Arkansas has been the top pharmacy in all of South Central Arkansas since 1895. They were also the 2020 Good Neighbor Pharmacy of the Year. They not only fix you up with your prescription with timely and friendly service, but also an elite gift shop. All your OTC needs, baby and wedding registries, tuxedo rentals, and much more. They're located at 821 North Rock Street in Sheridan. Give them a call today at 870-942-5121.
And we want to welcome you back to the Hog Talk Podcast. And again, we want to mention our sponsor, Arkansas Brewing Company, who is the sponsor of all our live broadcasts. You can find them at 201 South First Street in downtown Ozark, Arkansas. They're open from 4 p.m. Wednesday throughout the weekend, always having good drink specials, lunch specials. So if you're ever in the Ozark area, go down and see Chris and Destiny at Ozark Brewing Company. And Jacob, you mind mentioning our newest sponsor, our hotline, Amigo Provisions Company. Tell us what they're all about.
Brother, man, they have got some good looking stuff. Man, you got the hat on my head right here. It doesn't squeeze my fat head. It feels pretty good. Has the snaps on the back. You can get that at AmigaProvisions.com. They also have the Razorback button-down fishing performance shirt. They call it the Frio Tech Razorback Camo shirt. It has Razorbacks and the state of Arkansas accent on it. It says our lightweight Frio Tech shirts are just as cool as they are comfortable. Wear this on a quick afternoon fish out or the Frio. Let it be the talk, the tailgate, and opening day. Ideal temperatures for wearing this shirt range from 60 degrees to 95 degrees. It's got soft weight material, bottom down collar, no shrink, and fast drying. And it's officially licensed by the Arkansas Razorback group there too. So it's good stuff, man. Good fitting stuff.
Glad to have them on board. Can't wait to get some of that gear. I really like the how they blended the hog in, and they got other schools as well, but I like how they blend the hog in with the shirt and the camo on the hat. So I thought that was a really cool idea. But right here, we'll start with this question right here from Mark Rippey. It says, why do you guys think these guys haven't, like you said, meshed well together? I think it all has to do with the youth on the team. And I know we've brought that up multiple times when you're bringing freshmen in together, and then when you're a team – and you spend all summer together, and then you lose Nick Smith Jr. Then you lose Trevin Brazil. You've got two of your leading scorers. Now, this is not like football where you've got a running back one, running back two, wide receiver one, you've got a second string. You know, this is two starters out of your five that now have been taken out of your lineup, and that's two-fifths of your team that you got to try to now figure out how we're going to make this thing work. And you got to do it on the fly. This isn't like you've got a week to prepare for one team. You're playing multiple games in a week. You're playing a Tuesday, Saturday, yeah. Or you're playing in a Friday, Saturday, you know, showcase setting. And then you got to come back and start your grueling SEC schedule. So there's not much time. If you play on a Tuesday and then you got to play on a Saturday, so your game's on Tuesday, you might have a day off where you're going – Wednesday, Thursday, and then you travel, play on travel on Friday, play on Saturday. So you really don't have much time when it comes to in season to really, I mean, you can watch all the film you want, but practice and really trying to get things going, it's hard to do.
Yeah, and the way this season ended, honestly, you look at it, they've won three games since February 11th, and that was the day that Nick Smith came back into the lineup. Not just the starting lineup, but just the lineup in general. Got back in the rotation. And that's the thing. Like, you're in a flow with Devo. You've got Ricky Council flowing pretty well. You've got it pretty much figured out. You got the Mitchell twins playing really great ball, being able to really defend, block shots. It was kind of like watching Thursday night early on in the first half against A&M, and Arkansas was just blocking everything at the rim. Like, A&M was able to do nothing, and that's how Arkansas was able to get to that 14-point lead at halftime. And then everything just dwindled down. It's just – I think there's a lot of flaws throughout the offense. I think sometimes, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with Nick Smith not being out there and not having that flow. And I hate to blame it on the young man because it's not his fault. Like, this was his team. And I think if Arkansas could have gone all the way back to that exhibition game against Texas and not ever have had Nick Smith injured, take out Trevin Brazil, because I think that probably could have happened anyway. Just take that out hypothetically. I think the flow of this team is a whole lot different if you have Nick Smith for the whole season instead of just the last 11 or 12 games.
Well, of course.
I think that's the issue.
Part in it. Well, and it is. It's a big part of it. But still, yeah, it's like you've seen the play of – you're still having the same woes. And that's what I was asking Aaron. Is this a – I mean, because we're coming out of halftime. We know. Is this a – We're not scheming. We're not adjusting at halftime. How much is this mental of, man, this has happened so many times. Here they come. They go on a run. it's happening again. We're just going to fold over again because this is I mean, again, we got to put the mental aspect of these kids in that maturity level of we're not letting them come back. We're going to do everything we can to keep this from happening. We're going to step out a little bit on defense. We're going to, you know, take better shots. Just like that one game where I told you where Nick Smith Jr. come down and, you know, 5-point game, could have laid it up. I mean, had an easy drive to the basket, could have laid it up, broke it within three, shoots a 3-pointer, it rims out, and then it's like that from that point on, they could just never get their feet. And also, you know, you got to know when you're having a bad shooting night and you do say you missed three or four out of your last four shots. They make three out of the three. These runs, how do you pick yourself up? How do you mentally be like, all right, enough, let's get back in this game? Because as quick as you got in a hole, you in the game of basketball, as quick as you get down 6, 7, 8 points, you can get right back in it with a couple of stops and a couple of 2-pointers. I mean, that's just how basketball works.
Yeah. And the, I mean, let's not be silly. A&M was the second best team in the conference. And, you know, it's not okay to lose a 13-point, 14-point lead coming at halftime. But we got to remember, A&M is a dang good team. Yeah, they may have been underseeded, but that was because a lot of that had to do with how they scheduled their out-of-conference opponents.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't lose to any bad opponents. But, you know, you got to think about, you know, you lost to Tennessee on the road, and which Tennessee's had your number every single year at Thompson Bowling Arena. You played the best team in the country, the overall number one seed, by, what was it, 3 points, 2 points? Yeah, it was 3 points on the road at their place. And they're just that close. And then the Kentucky game, it just kind of got out of hand late in that ball game. So you got to think about down the stretch, it was a hard schedule. You lost to a Mississippi State team that at home that ended up being first four games. They have changed this thing up so much I can't ever keep up with the NCAA tournament with the way they added those four teams.
I do want to touch on something Jamie said. He said 1-5 in a row before Nick's return, finished 3-6, meant backwards. That's kind of a, I agree but disagree, because you look at the last six games. Yeah, Texas A&M ranked, who just played down to the wire. Then you had at Alabama, at Tennessee, and then you played Kentucky. So I mean, I see the 1-5 in a row, but I mean you beat Texas A&M, you played Carolina, you beat Kentucky, so you won three in a row. Then you dropped two in a row to Mississippi State and Texas A&M. You beat Florida, Georgia,
both tournament teams,
and then you lost three in a row. So you didn't win five in a row because you lost to Baylor.
I think it's five in a row conference games. What they were meaning there, so.
Well, but you got to look at the teams you're playing. Ole Miss, LSU. You're not playing the top tier teams, because you look at the Kentucky game, you know, you beat them in Lexington 88-73, but you got to look down the stretch. You played at Alabama, at Tennessee, and then you ended at Kentucky. So you're looking at that back to back, just like we talked on the women's side, back to back against South Carolina, LSU. You played Alabama and Tennessee back to back. And then you had to turn around and play Kentucky, and that's what we talked about, Jacob. At the end, you can't let – you got to get more wins going down the stretch, because those final three, you could go 0-3, and what happened? You went 0-3, and you finished 8-10 in conference. I mean, you need to sit there unless you get to the team where you're going to be at the top, like they have been, top three, four teams in the league. You can't sit there and be fighting the bubble, because that bubble will swallow you up, and then instead of you being 9-7 or whatever, 8-8. Now you're 8-10, and you got into the tournament as an 8 seed, and very gracious. I think you're very gracious they got an 8 seed, but I wish they had got a 10 seed, because I think that would have fared out more, because instead of playing Illinois and then say Kansas, you're looking at now you're possibly playing you wouldn't be playing Texas, and you'd be playing – well, Missouri's 7 seed, A&M's a 7 seed. Who else is a seven?
You potentially, State, the seventh seed would be is Northwestern Boise State.
Yeah, so you could in played, our bracket. You could have, but then look at the second round. You're playing Gonzaga. You go over here to Michigan State. You're the 10th seed. You're playing Michigan State. Then you're playing Marquette or Vermont.
Yeah.
But it's just the fact that it's still going to be a tough road ahead of them because Illinois is not, I mean, it's you're basically playing the Big Ten version of your team. Do you guys honestly believe this team is turning worthy? Yes, because the SEC is this deep. We got to look at when it comes to the Big Ten and the SEC and how deep these teams are, just how good, you know, look how Kentucky is on a down year, still how talented they are. And yeah. And then you're having to go to these teams and you're playing a team on a Wednesday and Saturday back-to-back on the road. And then, hey, let's come back and play Kentucky at home. I mean, is Arkansas right. one of the best 68 teams in the country? Yes. Yes, they are. It's just
– yep.
Go ahead.
And just thinking about it, like you look at the schedule, besides that loss against LSU on the road, Arkansas didn't lose to any bad teams at all this season in conference play. That's how stacked it was. You played Missouri twice, they're a tournament team. You played A&M twice, they're a tournament team. You played Alabama twice, they're the number one overall seed in the country. You played Tennessee on the road, they're a sixth seed. Let's see here. You played Vanderbilt, and I'm surprised they weren't even a first four out. Like they won 20 games and were playing the best ball I've seen under Jerry Stackhouse in probably 7 or 8 years at Vanderbilt. You lost that game 97-84, and then you lost to Missouri again. I mean, obviously you wish you could have that one back, but you beat the teams that you're supposed to beat outside the LSU game on the road, which LSU at that time was a whole different team. Then they ended up being a two-win team that season, this season in conference play. But, I mean, you beat Kentucky on the road, and then you lose to Mississippi State at home, which, I mean, it's Chris Jans. It's Mississippi State. They've had your number for years. It's not a surprising loss. And a lot of people on Twitter got me after I said this is not a bad loss against Mississippi State, and it wasn't because Mississippi State ended up being a tournament team.
But it's a home game.
It's a home game.
You've got to look at that one. But I do look at the Vanderbilt loss as a bad loss because you got beat. It wasn't a 5-point game. I mean, Vanderbilt beat you, and we got to look at that. But here's another thing we got to look at too. You had a 4-game losing streak, and then you had the 3-game losing streak. You know, when we're talking about body of work and why I said they got gracious with this, you know, you lost to Auburn, Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Missouri. Three of them out of the four were on the road. Of course, the Alabama game. I think there was a lot of pressure going in that Alabama game of winning that. But the Auburn game at Auburn, 72-59, that's a bad loss because – it's 72-59. You got beat 97-84. You let Vanderbilt almost put 100 on you. To me, that's a bad loss. Now, the Missouri loss, that's always a scrappy team. Then you run into Baylor. That was a good loss because that was a 67-64 battle. You know, but when you have a 4-game losing streak and then you have a 3-game losing streak, you're a streaky team.
Yeah.
But you're on the verge of you're streaking in the bad way opposed to you're going on a 4 or 5-game win streak. You know, it's just
– yeah.
So
– and I know that Arkansas did lose to LSU, but that was a whole different team at LSU. LSU was undefeated at the time. And they had KJ Williams playing really good ball. They had that West Virginia transfer playing some good ball at the time. So, I mean, in the end of things, it was a bad loss. But, I mean – that was really the only bad loss in conference play, like brutally bad loss. The rest of them I can deal with.
Yeah, and then you redeemed yourself. You beat them by 20 when you played them again.
Yeah, when it mattered. And then Jamie says, I agree, Vandy got snubbed. I don't think they got snubbed as far as getting out of the NCAA tournament because I don't think the SEC was going to get 9 teams in. But I do think they got snubbed as, like, they didn't even look like they were getting considered for the NCAA tournament.
Well, and I'll tell you what, A&M getting a
Carl
seven
asked
seed.
About the second half shortcomings. We talked about that in the first segment, so I don't know if we need to hash that back out. No. But
well, if you want to talk about somebody that might got snubbed, and that's A&M, you know, you're 25-9. You just played for the SEC championship. You've beat Alabama, and you get a seven seed. I mean, that's the part of where you really got to look at, do they deserved a higher seat when it comes down to it? Because, I mean, that's you're talking about teams that are different than they were earlier in the season. They're playing better basketball now, and again, you're going to hold them out. They got beat. I mean, they got blown out at the end, but we know how at the end of games it could be a 7-point game and then the free throws and all that, and it just gets away from them. But, you know, it's
yeah, Mississippi State was pretty close. They were within 12 with like 5 minutes to go against Alabama in the quarterfinals, and then it just went kaput. I mean, that's just really, that's honestly the only way I could explain it.
You're sitting at 15-3 in the SEC and you got a seven seed. That to me is just, yeah, that's crazy. So,
sorry.
Go ahead.
A&M lost to Murray State at a neutral site. They lost to Colorado State, or no, not Colorado, 103-75. And they lost to Boise State at a neutral site. This is all A&M. And then they lost to Memphis, who was an eighth seed. And then when they got to conference play, I mean, they were pretty solid. So I think the selection committee was penalizing A&M for the way they played in their non-conference compared to how they finished too.
Yeah, and it's tough when you go 8-2 in your last 10. I mean, if we go off last 10, you got beat by Arkansas, and then they got beat by Mississippi State. And they won the last game against, they beat Alabama, Ole Miss, beat Tennessee, and I'm trying to think, beat Auburn 15th, lost to Kentucky. But they're beating these ranked teams. It's just crazy how we look at these things. But also, and it goes to show when we're talking about with Arkansas making the last two Elite Eights, you know that has to do with a lot of things.
My mic. Porter, I can't hear you, buddy.
Yeah, I turned my mic off because I was coughing. I forgot to turn it back on.
That's all right. We had some dead air for about 30 seconds.
What I was talking about is the fact that they went, I don't know if you caught what I was saying, they went 8-2 in the final 10, which is a huge deal when it comes to Texas A&M. You know, the committees, how they rate these teams. You know, they beat some really good teams. They beat Tennessee. They beat Auburn. They beat Alabama, and they got a 7 seed. But what I was leaning into was, and I think we kind of touched on it with Aaron, was, you know, Arkansas was shown a little grace because they've made the last two Elite Eights. So, therefore, is that why they got that 8-9 game opposed to a 7-10? You never know when it comes to what can happen. But all is all, you got the bracket in front of you. You know who you got to play. And honestly, when this team, if you can play with Alabama, if you could play with Kentucky, and you could play with A&M, you can play with Kansas. I mean, Kansas is an elite team, but you can play with them. You could be on the same court with them. And that's what, all that matters is, when it comes down to it, who wants it more? Do you want to go for your third consecutive Elite Eight, or do you want to, just because we're playing up against Illinois and then going up against Kansas, because you can't overlook Illinois to get to Kansas. You got to play one game at a time, or you're out.
Yeah, and Illinois is battle-tested, just like we talked about. I mean, yeah, they're 19-13, but they played a pretty brutal non-conference schedule like we mentioned earlier. You look at Kansas, though, you think that Illinois was battle-tested. Check this out with Kansas, though. They played Kentucky. They have beaten Duke. They beat NC State. They beat Wisconsin. They beat Tennessee. No, they lost to Tennessee. I'm sorry. But that was when Tennessee was pretty dang good. They had Zakai Ziegler absolutely healthy. They blew out Missouri on the road. They obviously you go through the Big 12, and either the Big 12 is really stacked or they're not as going to be as great as they're supposed to be. We'll see. But, I mean, obviously they beat Baylor. They lost to Baylor on the road by six. And, I mean, even Kansas went through a three-game losing streak and then lost to Iowa State, but they and then they lost to Texas in the Big 12 Championship, and they didn't lose since. And then they lost to – oh, yeah, they lost to Texas on the road there, too, to close out the regular season. They lost the championship game against Texas, too. So they are battle-tested, but they're not unbeatable as a number one seed. They played a really good schedule, but I really think Arkansas, the way that Arkansas plays and the way Kansas plays, I think would be a really good matchup in the 1-8 game if Arkansas can get past Illinois.
Yeah, but and that's going to – I think that game, talent, you can stack up with them. It's yeah. That's going to be the mental. That's going to be the maturity. That's going to be, all right, it's that old saying that Larry Johnson said, it's time to get you some men. It's time for this team to be men.
Right.
And if they really want this, if they really they, – because they can play with anybody. And if they, I mean, you never know. They can get hot. They've shown they can get hot from three. They can't do it consistently. But they have to get better at their free throw shooting, and they have to – and I don't care if you try to go a 3-4-minute stretch with Pinion in there to try to get some threes, but you're going to need to get threes because I'm telling you right now, tournament time, I don't know what that three-point – AI does, you know, when you're playing your NBA 2K or whatever, and you can adjust that three-point AI up, it just always seems to be that one guy that just gets hot from the three-point line in these tournament games. You got to defend the three, right. And you got to hit some more threes.
Yep. Interesting bit about Kansas, though, is they are only six men deep. They don't have a very big rotation. They have a bunch of guys that average maybe 2.5 to 1.2 points a game, but the majority of their scoring, like their biggest player that they depend on is Jalen Wilson, averages 20 a game at his four position, 6'8", 215. Grady Dick, who's a big-time shooter, 6'8", 205 at guard. Then you have KJ Adams, who averages 10, Kevin McCullough, who averages 10, and DeJuan Harris, that averages 8. And then you have Joseph Yesfu, I guess is how you say his name, out of Illinois. He's a junior guard, 6 foot. But they have that's basically as deep as they go. And they have Ernest Uday, who's a 6'11 center, averages 2.5, 1.9 rebounds a game. But, I mean, that's their biggest guy, and that's as deep as they go. But they have pretty good size, too.
Well,
I think that would be a really good matchup.
You look at Illinois, they got their two guys at 17 and 12, but you look at the next four, you got 9.9, 9.7. I mean, you almost got five guys in double digits scoring. I mean, this is five guys that your starters that they're, 0.1 to 0.3 points from having your starting five in double figures. So, I mean, again, we can't overlook Illinois at all. I mean, this is a toss-up game. Just how similar they are in scoring and defense and rebounding and free throw percentage. I mean, this is – I mean, their top guy is only shooting 79% from the free throw line, and that's Shannon Jr. He's shooting 79% from the 3-point line. He's only shooting 32% from the 3-point line. So this is going to be a very tough game. They get you just a hair on the rebounds per game. I think they get you by two. I think I put a tweet out. I think it was like 37 point something to 35. So this is going to be a big deal, and they got some guys that can block some shots too. You know, they got 181 blocks on the season.
Yeah, I like what Jamie says here about being a disappointing team. I will reserve my thoughts as far as being a disappointing team until after the NCAA tournament. We'll see how that goes. But when I think of a long time, I don't think, honestly, the Daniel Gaffer, Jalen Barford, Daryl Macon team that had a first-round exit against Butler, I think that was a really disappointing team based on how they started the season because they had beaten Oklahoma, they had beaten North Carolina in that that Paul Knight or whatever, Phil Knight Classic up there in Oregon. And then they beat Tennessee at home, and then, you know, they limped a little bit through conference play, and then got back up right before the end of the season, and I really thought that team had a lot of promise under Mike Anderson. If Eric Musselman could have had that team, I think he would have won probably he probably could have won a national championship with that team just off the guard play and how big of a force Daniel Gafford was as a freshman. But and then the next year, I thought they were even more disappointing by even missing the NCAA tournament, going 18-16. So as far as the hype, I think this team's been disappointing because we thought. I mean, I even teased my father-in-law several times about, yeah, Arkansas is going to be like 42-0 national champs. I mean, this is the roster. This is the year. And it ended up being Alabama's year to really run roughshod through the SEC.
Frustrating, yes. This has been one of the most frustrating because the fact that look what's happened, and this goes overall sports at the University of Arkansas. Following Arkansas sports forever. You know, your football team's doing good. Your basketball team's doing good. Your baseball team's going to the World Series. Your softball team's winning SEC championships. Soccer team's winning SEC championships. Now, here we are. We're starting to get back down. You're digressing. Your football team goes down a little bit. Now look at the basketball team. You know, it's almost like it's frustrating because it's almost like, well, we had a couple of good years. Now it's back to reality. It's almost that mindset of, I knew this wouldn't last forever. And I'm not saying this year is going to last forever, but just to have the injuries play into it, but to be the biggest failure, this team would have to be full strength, healthy, having the hype of what they did, and then you go 8-10. Now, if they had Trevin Brazil and Nick Smith Jr. full season and they finish 8-10, definitely. I would say definitely the most disappointing season. But you still made the tournament with two of your star players out most of the game, most of the year. Trevin out, I mean, he only played 9 games. Nick Smith Jr. played in only 14 games. So he's still on the verge of breaking out. I mean, he's done really good getting into the rotation and doing his part. But he's not even peaked yet. That's the scary thing. He's averaging 14 points a game, and he ain't even peaked yet. So we'll see what the tournament does. Maybe he goes off for 20. But it's going to take either Nick Smith Jr. or Anthony Black to average. You're going to have to average 20 points a game in this tournament. The 14-12, you're going to have to step it up. Because Trevin Brazil out, and you got Ricky Council's at 15, Nick Smith Jr.'s at 14, Black is at 12, Devo's at 10, and then Jordan Walsh. So other than Jordan Walsh, your other guys are your starting guys are in double-digit scoring. So, again, when we're talking about these similarities between this and Illinois, Thursday is going to be a dogfight. It's going to – if Arkansas wins this by 10 to 15 or Illinois wins this by 10 to 15 – it's going to come down to free throw shooting, but I'm telling you, this is going to be a dogfight that it's going to be like that Colgate game where it could start out. Illinois could start out on an 8-0 run. It's just that's what type of game we can look at, but it's all right. Let's pick it up and let's get back in the game. I see Arkansas winning, but I think it's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah, I think Arkansas will win this game based on the fact that they are very much more physical. They love to run. I think if you can get Illinois out of their fill early in the game, I think Arkansas can dictate it. And they know it now. The back is against the wall. Like, losing, you're done. And I think, like I said earlier, Musselman is one of the best in the country at getting his teams prepared, whether it be in a 4-day window or a 1-day window. I think Eric Musselman is one of the best in the country when it comes to that. I think Arkansas gets the round one win against Illinois, and then it's all crapshoot from there.
Yeah, and by this time next week, we're going to know if Arkansas is in the Sweet 16 or we'll know where they're at when it comes to this tournament because they play on Thursday and then they turn around and play on Saturday.
On Saturday.
So, you know, we'll know on Sunday, hey, are we primed for another Sweet 16 Elite Eight run, or are we talking about what's going to be happening next year with this team? Jacob, you got anything else before we wrap it up?
Nah, man, I'm going to be kicked back. Hopefully Arkansas takes care of business on Thursday, and I can kick back with my toes in the sand on Saturday watching them against Kansas. So, man, I'm excited about it. I'm ready to go on vacation. But, guys, thank y'all for tuning in. Make sure you like, rate, and review our podcast on whatever podcast platform you like it. Hey, invite your friends to like us and follow us on Twitter and Facebook, too, if that's how you feel and that's what you want to do. I think me and Porter are one of the two coolest kids on the block. So give us a like, share our page, and if you enjoy our content, yeah, just go review and rate our podcast. Maybe even throw in a 5-star.
Well, that will do it for another episode of the Hog Talk Podcast, presented to you by Arkansas Brewing Company and betonline.ag, and we will catch you next week.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.